Talk about Nezikin. So Nezikin is a particularly fascinating idea. And in this past week's parasha and parashas Mishpatim, so we read about the Avos Nezikin, meaning that there are different categories for which one is liable if one damaged somebody else's property. So essentially, the way the Gemara tells us in the beginning of Bava Kamma, the Mishnah says that there are four major categories, Arba Avos Nezikin, derived from the Psukim. The Gemara then goes on to give different versions that there should be a higher number, but for simplicity's sake, without getting into any of the debates, let's say for our purposes that there are four. The four being Hashor v'Habor, Hashor meaning if you have an animal that you let loose and the animal does damage, so that's your responsibility because you own it. A Bor, if you create a pit so that somebody can drive their car into and then damage their car, you have a liability for that also, even though you may not own it, because let's say you did in the middle of Amsterdam Avenue, so you don't own it, so that's something the Gemara says, Asal Kasuv Kilu Rubishuso, that the Torah treats it as if it's yours. It's as if you're liable for what happens on Amsterdam Avenue because you created it, and that's actually linked to Chametz, which is something they should be learning this year, so that's a connection. That Chametz and Bor Bershusa Rabim are two things that we don't officially own, but yet we are considered liable for nonetheless. And the other two, for simplicity's sake, to ignore any machlokes in the Gemara about this, are a human being causes damage, even unintentionally, which is something we'll discuss. So let's say, even if you're asleep and you happen to roll over on something, so you could be liable for that too. And a fire. So if you set a fire and the fire then continues to burn and causes damage, so then that's something you're liable for also. And these are broad categories. Bava Kamma is particularly fascinating Masechta because if your mind is attuned to abstractions, you particularly enjoy Bava Kamma because you see that a shore is not really a shore and a bore is not really a bore. These are all broad categories for things that share attributes with these things. So you create a public danger that's a bore of all types of different things that fall into that category. And fire, many things could be comparable to fire in terms of how they damage. So the Gemara has fascinating discussions trying to figure out what are the unique attributes of each of these four that you can then build on to other examples. And that's all derived from the Psukim in this past week's parasha. But what's not explicit, and which is the cause of a lot of debate, is the Torah doesn't seem to say specifically that it's prohibited to do this. So what if I were to come up to you with a sledgehammer and say, listen, I'm in the mood right now to smash in your windshield. I'm very upset about something, so I'm going to smash your windshield. But I'm writing out the check. I'll write it out beforehand. I'll pay you in advance. Here I'm fulfilling Parshas Mishpatim. I'm paying the cost of the damages. But I'm going to do it now. I'm going to break it under that understanding. Am I allowed to do that? Is it mutter to damage somebody else's property if I plan on paying for it? So it doesn't seem like it is, and as we'll see, many assume that it's not. But, and I think our common sense would be that it's very hard to believe that it should be mutter, but it's not explicit in the parasha that you can't do it. The parasha just talks about the chiyuvim to pay. It doesn't say what happens if you actually, it doesn't say that you're not allowed to decide to do this. So it does seem explicit from Rishonim that there is a prohibition, from a number of Rishonim in a number of places. For example, the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, their phrasing certainly sounds like there's not just a obligation to pay, but there is a prohibition. It's a little bit of a contradiction in the Rambam, because the Rambam, in terms of what he writes in Hilchos Tshuva and what he writes in Hilchos Chovah L'Mazik, there's a little bit of a contradiction in terms of what you have to do. If you damage somebody's property, in one place he says you have to ask for mechila, in the other place he doesn't. So the idea of asking for mechila seems to say it's not enough, you write out the check, you have to still apologize, you did something wrong, you did an avera. Sounds like that from a lot of other sources also, for example, the Gemara in Kedushin in the second parak, which talks about the sugya of Ein Shliach L'Dvar Avera, so to what extent are you connected if you send somebody on a avera mission on your behalf, so to what extent does that trace back to you? So in the context of that, the Gemara talks about somebody who gives somebody a torch to carry somewhere else, and he then does damage with the torch. So the assumption seems to be that that's an aver, not just a liability in terms of money, but it's a sin, and where we could get into this question of Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aver. Other examples there is, it's a little bit complex, but it's also relevant, so let's mention it. There is a Rashba in the beginning of Bava Kamma that the Gemara there talks about the obligation you have for a shor. So let's say you have an ox, your ox goes and gores another ox. So the Torah indicates already there's two different categories of an ox. There is what we call a shor tam, which is a normal, average, innocent shor. We have no reason to expect that he's going to be particularly aggressive. And then you have a shor muad. A shor muad is an animal where he already has a reputation. It's already been established that he's likely to cause problems, and then you have an obligation to have a higher level of watching over it. So the Gemara discusses one scenario and seems to imply that the default position should be, if you're not sure what the rule is, the default position should be muad, that we assume that he is a higher level of liability. So the Rashba says, why is that the case? This is a monetary dispute. If he's a higher level of liability, it means the owner has to pay more. And normally the rule is, hamotze mechaveru alo haraya, that if I'm trying to get you to pay me, I have the burden of proof to show that you owe me. So why should the default position be the higher obligation? The default position should be the lower obligation. So the Rashba says, we don't treat this like a suffix in money, we treat this like a suffix in iser. That there's some prohibition involved, and therefore a suffix derais in l'chumra, it's treated like a prohibition. So that again seems to be implying that there's a prohibition here. But even though the Torah doesn't say what the prohibition is. Also, there's a discussion, if somebody damages somebody else's property, even if he pays for it, so there's a whole discussion, should we assume that such a person is disqualified from edus? A person who engages in certain types of averas is disqualified from testifying. So is there such a disqualification if a person is involved in damaging people's property? So many, like the Bach and others, think that there is such an exclusion, that it's an avera, like stealing, just like if a person is a thief, he's excluded from edus. So too, a person who is a mazik is also excluded as well. So it seems from all the literature post the Talmud that there is, certainly from all the Rishonim and the codification literature, it does seem like there is an Isser. It's just not clear what the Isser is from Parshas Mishpatim where we'd expect to find it. And there's a lot of literature about that, trying to figure out and trying to pin down where it is. I'd like to look at some of that discussion and maybe give a little bit of a different perspective towards it. So right off the bat, the Stipler, who's one of the Achronim who deal with this, the Stipler in his first essay in Bava Kamma, this is the great Shir Petichah of Bava Kamma. If you're learning Bava Kamma, so the first topic you want to talk about is, you know, where do we get into this whole story? What's the issue with damaging somebody's property? So the Stipler says, I'll tell you right away what it's not. I'll tell you what's not the right answer. It says, Bal Tashchis is not the right answer. Why not? Because Bal Tashchis has two factors which don't work with Nezikin. One is that Bal Tashchis applies equally to your own stuff. I can't waste my own property. And Nezikin here is clearly only applying to somebody else's property. So that seems to be a lack of correlation. He says, and also when it comes to Bal Tashchis, there are circumstances when it's mutter. So for example, if you're going to get more value from destroying the item than from keeping it, so then that's permissible. So you might say, if that's the source, this is all assuming like the Taz, there's a whole discussion in terms of Bal Tashchis that that's the case, that Sorach Adam is Mutter, that for the purposes of humanity is better served by destroying the item than it's permissible. That's the view the Taz has based on the Rush, and that's how most assume. So if that's the case, so then would we apply that to Nezikin? If I feel humanity is better off if I break your stuff so I can break your stuff, it's Mutter? Hard to believe. So Stipler says right away that's not the right answer. One could maybe suggest that it shouldn't be dismissed so quickly, that there might be some room to say that Bal Tashchis is relevant here. Because, let's try to zone in, it often gets lost in this discussion because it goes back and forth between different possible sources. What exactly are we trying to figure out here? Right, we're assuming the guy is paying for the monetary component. Right, so the issue is not about the mummies. The issue is that even though he's making good on the monetary value, it's wrong for him to destroy the property. So we feel instinctively that it's probably wrong. So why is it wrong?
But that would also apply to his own property.
Correct. So maybe that's still true. That's the thing. So maybe this instinctive feeling that we have, there's something wrong with this, maybe it's not so different from Bal Tashchis. Right? Bal Tashchis, the Sefer Achinuch says, when he talks about Bal Tashchis, we're talking about the source of the issue of damaging people's property. So when it comes to Baal Tashmis, so the Sefer HaChinuch says the reason we have such a prohibition is Shlo Yidabek B'Hashchasa. A person shouldn't be involved in destructiveness. It's not a good midah. So he understands it as a midos type of issue. So it could be that that's the case here also, that the monetary issue you're dealing with separately. And from a midos perspective, it's a crazy thing to be doing, to going around damaging people's property for no reason. That's wasteful. And in a chanami, so if it's your own property, so then it's just Baal Tashmis, and if it's and there's nobody to pay back because you're the owner. But if it's somebody else's property, so it shares this element with Baal Tashmis, and you have to pay. So I don't know if it's so off the charts to say that the Isser Shabo, the prohibition, is motivated by Baal Tashmis or something similar. And it just happens to be that your own property, there's no chiyuv to pay back, but the other person's property is chiyuv to pay back, and it's Baal Tashmis. And then, if in terms of the exclusion for humanity's needs, okay, maybe that's true also, or maybe that fits into the equation somehow. I don't know if it has to necessarily be thrown out. And it's interesting that the Rush is Chuvis. So the Rush says, what's the mucker that is wrong to damage somebody's property? It's not a pasuk in Chumash, it's a pasuk in Nach. Derachah, darchei Noam, v'chol nesiva se'ashal. So it's not the way of the Torah. The Torah is peaceful and is pleasant, and strong stuff is not. So that sounds like another version of the same idea, that Baal Tashmis is about not being violent, so to speak, in terms of items, and Derachah Darchei Noam is a similar type of idea, so it's a different pasuk, but it seems like the same idea, that the Rosh is saying that from a Midos perspective, even if you're paying for it, this is not the kind of thing Jews should be doing, and maybe it's not so radically different from a Baal Tashmis type of source. Okay, but in any event, the Stifler thought that this should be excluded. If you don't like that, then the first source that's often quoted, everybody who talks about this, first mentions of Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah, it's also interesting, we have to really consider how relevant it is in terms of the specific question we're trying to figure out. So Rabbeinu Yonah has a comment in his commentary to Pirkei Avos. It's the first Mishnah. The second, Dibra Maschel Moshe. Moshe Kibbol Torah Misinai. Then it goes on to another one, Moshe. So Rabbeinu Yonah over there has a comment, which is always quoted in this context. You know, it's interesting because this is also Parshas Mishpatim. You know, Parshas Mishpatim begins, the first Rashi Mishpatim tells us the Vav, the Eila HaMishpatim, is to show you that this Parsha, even though it sounds like it's all intellectual and common sense logical, is also Misinai. And some of the Mefarshim explain that's also why Pirkei Avos begins the way it does. The first Mishnah in Avos says, Moshe Kibbol Torah Misinai. It's important to know that the whole tradition of the Torah Shebaal Peh, from Moshe to Yehoshua, etc., etc., but that should be the first Mishnah in Shas. That should be the opening of Brachos. Why do we have to wait till Pirkei Avos to be told that? So the Bartanura and the Meiri and others explain that you might have thought otherwise. You see a Masechta like Pirkei Avos, which talks about smile a lot, things like that. Be nice to people. Sounds like it's how to win friends and influence rabbis, how to win friends and influence people, as suggested by the rabbis. Wise advice from the sages. So they say that's why it starts off, Moshe Kibbol Torah Misinai. You should know this is just as much Torah as everything else. This is also from the Torah. So that's the Mishpatim theme, the Eila HaMishpatim. Was also from Sinai. So Rabbeinu Yonah commenting on that Mishnah. So Rabbeinu Yonah says, yeah, we're very fortunate that we have Moshe receiving the Torah and teaching the tradition how to understand it. Because if we don't have that whole tradition, we wouldn't understand what it says in the Chumash. We wouldn't know all of the applications just based on the Psukim. It says, for example, the Torah says lo sigzol, so we're not allowed to steal. But would we know without Moshe Rabbeinu telling us that that also includes being a mazik? It also includes damaging somebody's property? So, luckily, we have the tradition from Moshe that tells us how to read the Psukim in the Torah. So this Rabbeinu Yonah is often quoted in an abbreviated fashion. Oh, Rabbeinu Yonah says, Mazik is lo sigzol, that's the marker. But we have to really figure out how it fits into this whole story, because there's a couple of questions to ask about that. First of all, is he addressing the case that we're addressing? Is he talking about where you are paying for the property? If you're making good on the monetary loss, would Rabbeinu Yonah still say it's lo sigzol? It's not clear, especially because it's hard to know exactly how he's applying it, because the whole context of his comment is that this is not an obvious application of the pasuk, that this is something that we wouldn't know without the tradition. So it's actually not clear how he knows it. What's the earlier source that tells Rabbeinu Yonah that this is the case? So there's a lot to figure out about that Rabbeinu Yonah. In general, it's a rich statement for analysis. How much it fits into the case that we're talking about. So maybe Rabbeinu Yonah just means that if I go around damaging people's stuff and not paying, I'm a gazim, which is also a chiddush, because there is what to figure out about that. Is that called gazela if I cause you a loss? Normally, if I steal, I'm doing two things. I'm causing you a loss, and I'm profiting myself. So if I cause you a loss without profiting myself, is it so obvious that's called a gazlan? Could be it's machlokas tzos and nesivis in a later discussion. It comes up, for example, the Ran. The Ran in his commentary to Sanhedrin, the Ran says that we have Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach that apply to all of humanity. So the Ran says, is that true also included in that list? You also have Chavala. Person causes bodily harm, that's also included. How do you know it's not one of the seven, as far as we can tell? So he says, first of all, he connects chavala and mazik, property, and people are the same thing. Chavala means to hurt a person, and mazik means to hurt a property. So it's the same thing. He says, ma mali chaval ba'atmo, mali chaval ba'mamono, it's the same thing. So it should be considered together. But then he's saying both of those are included in Gezel, and that is one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, you can't steal. So causing damage is also a subset of stealing. So the Ran apparently is also assuming that Gezel includes damaging, even though others might say no, others might say that it's a different Isser, but the idea of Gezel means you are taking something for yourself.
So I would assume that, take just drawing an analogy to Me'ilah,
mm-hmm.
Do we assume that also damaging Hekdesh is also the same thing as Me'ilah?
So it's a fair question. Then maybe you would say that it also transferred. That's something you have to try to look into a little bit. It's also interesting because we mentioned a few minutes ago that there is a discussion that the Bach and others had that should somebody who damages property, let's even say for a second he doesn't pay. Let's say somebody who damages doesn't pay, should he be disqualified from Eidus? So there are a number of reasons to say, yeah, but one of the expressions you find in some of the literature that talks about this says, yeah, mali gazel acherim, mali gazel atzmo, something like, yeah, what difference does it make if he since he's damaging somebody's property, what difference does he make if it's putting it in his own pocket or if he's putting it nowhere? So one could say it makes a big difference, because when we talk about psulei eidus, it's not just every avera. We have a category called a rasha d'chamas. It means a person is not only in violation of the Torah, but he does so because he's motivated by desire for money. So we're worried if a person is a thief, he's willing to violate the Torah in order to profit, so maybe he could also be bribed to give false testimony because he'll violate the Torah for profit. So then if he's vulnerable in that way, so then we're worried. So maybe one could argue he's a thief is because he wants money. If he's damaging somebody's property, it shares a commonality with theft, but he's not profiting. It doesn't show that he's motivated by desire for money. So one could question how exactly it fits. But so all of that is a discussion surrounding this Rabbeinu Yonah, which is usually the first candidate. Usually after the stipler, for example, takes away Baltashkis, the candidate who loses, or the first candidate who wins, or who makes it onto the list, is this Rabbeinu Yonah. There are other suggestions as well. So some say, and this is a powerful approach, the Ar Ramah in his commentary to Baba Basra, the Ar Ramah says that he thinks that the issue is V'yahav t'l'recha kamocha. That will stand by the Klal Gadol b'Toru, V'yahav t'l'recha kamocha, covers so much. So here especially, it's interesting that what is the practical application of V'yahav t'l'recha kamocha? So the Rambam and others understand that it's the mitzvah of chesed, the mitzvah to do things for people in general. But there were, among the Rishonim, and especially later, there were some who said that it's hard to see this as a positive mitzvah. Because how do you understand kamocha? You can't do for any one person, let alone the whole world, but for any one person as much as you do for yourself. It's just not physically possible. You can't work to support your family and work to support your neighbor's family also. It doesn't. No one has that kind of resources. So you have to assume, some say, that maybe this is really a negative mitzvah. The way it's reformulated in the Gemara and Shabbos, in the negative, the famous story of Hillel and the Ger says, tell me the whole Torah on one foot, and Hillel distills it to him to what's later been known as the Golden Rule, says, Ma da'alach sani l'chevecha lo savid, that which is hateful to you, don't do to others. So some understand that's what the after echa kamocha means, that it's a negative formulation, that we can't say it means do stuff for others the way you would do for yourself. That's not possible. But we can say it means don't hurt others in a way that you would not want to be hurt. So So therefore, it could be that's going on the same way. You would not want somebody smashing in your windshield, even if they're going to give you a check on the spot. You'd say, I'd rather not have your check and have my windshield than have my broken windshield and your check. So too, you can't do that to somebody else, a violation of Yahavta L'Recha Kamocha. Rav Kook has a tshuva in which he discusses that there is a... this could also be relevant, for example, the concept called the Hezek She'eino Nikker, that you can cause damage to somebody's property in a way that's not visible, it's not perceptible. Usually means, for example, you cause halachic damage. You do something that makes their property prohibited or something like that. So then that's normally putter from a direct obligation. That's normally something that you can't be held monetarily liable for. So is it prohibited? So Rav Kook has a tshuva where he says that's just as prohibited as everything else, because the same way the Yahavta L'Recha Kamocha is active here, you wouldn't want anybody assuring your stuff. You don't want somebody damaging your stuff in an invisible way. So too, you're not going to want to damage, you shouldn't be allowed to damage somebody else's stuff. He then goes on to say, similar to the Stifler's objection about Baal Tashchis, that there could then be exceptions. Like there are circumstances you could envision where you would damage your own stuff because there's some bigger gain to get. So then maybe that would also constrict how much you're prohibited towards somebody else. That's something to figure out. There could be ways in which it's going to fall short, but essentially that would be the source of the prohibition, even in a circumstance where there is no actual monetary liability.
So, for example, making it, let's say, hektish.
Right. So that might be, so hektish you can't really do because in other maktish davreshenu shalom. So I can't really dedicate to the Beis Hamikdash somebody else's property. But there are other things I could do that could disqualify your property, that could cause it to be prohibited in some way. And then there, without going into all the details because it takes time. But
I'm thinking of a way where you're,
right. So hektish,
you're making it at a higher level.
Right, so hektish technically I can't do, but there are other things I could do. I could, you have to figure out exactly what things you can do, but there are ways I can mess up your stuff in ways that are not visibly clear but are practically problematic for you.
So if I have something that's hefker, right, an abandoned car in the middle of the street, right? Mm-hmm. So I'll get some pleasure. Now I'll go back to the sledgehammer thing, right? There's no possibility of paying damages because in theory it doesn't belong to anybody.
Right.
So that's a case where now you could, some of these things could get sorted out, whether or not it's us or not, right?
Right. So you get into that whole Baal Tashchis question.
Right.
So then Baal Tashchis, how does that affect so? If there's no owner, so it's clear there's no chi of Nazika, the only question is there an Isser? Which is why I think, again, Baal Tashchis is perfectly relevant. I wouldn't throw it out so quickly. But there is a question whether or not Baal Tashchis applies to something that's so hefker. There's a famous comment of the Rush. The Rush has in his commentary to Tumid, this may end up being a two-parter if we carry over to next week, but the Rush has in his commentary to Tumid that the Mishnayos talk about the shomrim of the Beis HaMikdash, the people whose job it was to watch the Beis HaMikdash. So what would happen if they fell asleep on the job? So to make sure they don't fall asleep again, they would do various things, including burning their clothes. So the Rush has a question there. So how could you do that? It's a problem of Baal Tashchis. So he says, well, the answer is Hefker Bezdin Hefker. Bezdin has to make rules to enforce this, so they have the right to do. They have the right to be mafker the guy's property, and that's why it's okay. So
did they ever fall asleep?
Yeah, well, presumably they're human beings, but they probably fall asleep less often after their
clothes. Shomrim, or
the Shomrim? The Shomrim is all. We're not going to get. Like, there's a lot of details about that, which we'll maybe leave for a future date. But for now, just in terms of this aspect of it being an issue of Baal Tashchis, so the Rush gives this answer of...
Who were they?
They're by clans.
Yeah, I just don't want to get into all the details because it was... But in terms of... I'm sorry, but it's in terms of the Hefker Bez and Hefker component,
right.
So the latest farm, the Far of Ram, has a whole essay about this where he says, what is that going to do with anything? Hefker Bez and Hefker, he sounds like he's answering the wrong question. It sounds like the issue was, if the Rush had said, what about Lo Sigzol? You're stealing their clothes and burning them. So then you can give the answer, no, Hefker Bezdin Hefker, that the Bezdin decided that this was okay, it's not their property anymore. But what does Hefker Bezdin Hefker have to do with Baal Tashchis? So some, this is a whole discussion, and some say, well, maybe there's what to figure out. Is there a Baal Tashchis by property that's a Hefker? Because logically speaking, there should be a prohibition. What difference does it make if it's valuable? And that's also why Baal Tashchis also ties in. We could talk about Baal Tashchis separately also, if this is an interesting topic. We could put this on the agenda also. But Baal Tashchis fits into the whole environmental concern, which is clearly not tied into any individual human's ownership. So maybe we will revisit that topic separately. But just in terms of here, we're dealing with somebody else's property, so the issue of Vehavta Recha Kamocha is one consideration, and that has a strong basis.
But if you make property Hefter,
uh-huh.
Then it can become degraded, it can become, you know, you're not cultivating, so it there is some type of loss of value.
Correct. So I'm saying, so that's why we would think.
So that's that, Baal Tashchis.
Right. So we would think instinctively, we would think that Baal Tashchis should apply to a property that's Hefker. So there's a whole discussion based on this Rush, because the Rush seems to be suggesting.
The
Rush's suggestion that somehow making something Hefker takes it out of Baal Tashchis is non-intuitive. It's hard to understand. As the later Svarim say, it would be better if he asked a different question. If he was asking, how could they steal the clothes? So the answer is, no, the clothes don't belong to them anymore. Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker. But if the answer is, if the question is, it's a Jeopardy issue. The question is that, if the question is Baal Tashchis, what does Hefker got to do with it? So, Blin Eder, as a follow-up, we'll talk about Baal Tashchis separately.
Then how can we kill animals for Kabbalah's Baal Tashchis?
Right. Let's leave all the Baal Tashchis questions.
The answer is not the mitzvah.
Right. So let's leave all the Baal Tashchis questions for part two. And even this topic will probably be a two-parter. Let's talk about some of the other sources, then we'll talk about Baal Tashchis separately, see how it fits in. It'll be a companion piece. So, in terms of the Yad Ramah, well, he says this issue of the Hatzorech Kamoch, he throws in another pasuk also. He throws in the pasuk of Lifnei Iver L'Sitei Michshol, which parenthetically is a fascinating topic for a list if you want to put it on. The issue of Lifnei Iver L'Sitei Michshol, that is it's a difficult pasuk to understand, because Chazal, it's also a Pesachim topic, those learning Pesachim this year, but Chazal give additional interpretations of what Lifnei Iver is about. And the question is, it's hard to read literally, because the pasuk says you shouldn't put a rock in front of a blind person. So it's hard to imagine the Jews need to be told that. That's the level that we're at. Now, I would have thought, before the Torah spelled it out, that there's no problem at all with my tripping up blind people. Oh, now I have a pasuk says, as the Gemara would, to paraphrase the Gemara, v'chi b'jerk saskina, you know, which we're addressing, you know, what kind of people are we addressing? So the Minchas Tinuch actually says that the additional interpretations that you find in the Gemara, like giving somebody bad advice or helping somebody do an Averim, it's all fascinating issues. That's the only interpretation, rather. You can't even mean what it says literally, because that's too obvious. So then there's an issue. It says, well, Mikra Yoitzim Dei Pshuto, Pasuk has to mean at least what it means. It can mean more things, but it has to at least mean what it means. So it discusses why maybe that's not an issue. But what about the Pshuto? So Pashtus is, even more broadly, maybe there's an extreme of tripping up a blind person intentionally, but maybe the pasuk literally means that you cause somebody to trip. That's an isser. That's a problem. There's a bor b'rishos harabim is a violation of Ne'ivah lo sitei mitchol. So that seems to be what the Arama is getting at here. And the whole discussion about this in Rabbi Yochum Fishel Perlo's commentary to the Rav Sajagon, he has a whole discussion of what the relationship is between Lifnei Iver and Losasim Damavesach. You can't have a dangerous household, so you shouldn't have an angry dog in your house, things like that. So what exactly is the relationship between these two Yisurim? He has a whole essay about. So the Meshech Chachma happens to say, for example, if I put a bor b'rishos harabim, I'm in violation of Lifnei Iver Lo Sitei Michshol, and if I put a bor in my own house, I'm in violation of Losasim Damavesach. Okay, so maybe that's also connected to this. I'll just mention a few more ideas, and then we'll probably still have some.
That applies to our group without any fence.
So that also was an interesting question, because that has a separate pasuk. The obligation to make defense is a separate mitzvah, and then there's a whole question. The Gemara says, for example, that
it's a separate bracha.
Right.
So we know that becomes right. That's a mitzvah in its own right.
Right. But see, it's interesting that
why. Should it be part of the
So it could be they're related, and it's also a separate topic, but just very parenthetically, says the Mishnah in Kedushin says that women are obligated in that mitzvah, because it's a mitzvah saseh, she'ein hazman grama. It's a positive mitzvah, but it's not time-bound. You can do it any time. So women are obligated. So Tosfos asks the question, well, women would be obligated anyway, because there's a lo saseh connected to it also. And they're obligated in all prohibitions. So it's a whole discussion how they have those two connect. Also, we could put that on the agenda. But in any event, so in terms of, we'll mention a few more sources, we probably won't finish everything today, and we'll carry over a little bit into next week. So another possible source, the Chassam Sofer has a fascinating tshuva, where he says that we kind of work backwards, that the fact that the Torah has these monetary liabilities, what's that there for? Says that's essentially there as a protective measure. So what does it address? It addresses v'nishmartem al nafsho seichem and leisam ol dam reyachad. Says that we don't want people to get hurt. We don't want you to hurt yourself. That's v'nishmartem al nafsho seichem, and we don't want you to cause other people to get hurt. That would be a violation of leisam ol dam reyachad. So how do we make sure that those will be protected? What can we do that will guarantee that this will be observed? So if we put an obligation to pay for property damage, so then because there is such a standard, because the Torah tells us I'm going to have to pay if somebody gets hurt, and even if I didn't do it on purpose, it's still my liability, so then that will make people be careful. They're not going to want to have unleashed animals, they're not going to want to set fires, they're not going to want to do things that could end up costing them money, and the world will be a safer place. That essentially the other values of Vinishmartem and Los Amar Al Dam Riacha are going to be enhanced by the fact that there is a obligation to pay for property. So he understands it that way, that the Torah works backwards, that by making the liability for these things, so that will force people to practically have a safer environment. They'll have a safer environment. The other mitzvahs, which are more about people rather than property, but will be protected. But it's interesting. So this idea that it's about property rather than people, so or the other way around, so the pasuk losam al dam reyacha that he mentions, so that could be a good marker for this also, because as Soloveitchik was quoted in the Masorah Journal as saying this point, that he thinks that the marker is losam al dam reyacha, that there the Torah says you're not allowed to stand by when somebody is in danger. So it's a simple kavachomer, it would seem, that if you can't let somebody get damaged, so then kal v'chomer, I can't cause the damage. So certainly if I can't allow it to happen passively, I can't do it actively. So that being the case, then you fit into the equation, the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvos, when he talks about lo samar al dam reyacha. So he says, first of all, it's not just mortal danger, it's all kinds of danger. And it's both physical and material. We know that in a biblical and Talmudical usage, dam and damim mean both blood and money. So whether it's don't stand by your neighbor's blood, don't stand by your neighbor's property at risk, you shan't let somebody come to harm, not even passively. So certainly, kal v'chomer actively, if I can't let somebody, if I see that somebody left his DVD player on the lawn before it's about to snow again, so I have to tell them they should bring it in. So certainly I can't be the one to damage it. I certainly can't. Right. So that's very similar to the approach that the Stipler liked. And maybe we'll just mention this approach, and then next week we'll mention some more approaches, and then maybe segue into Baltashkus as a companion discussion. That the Stipler in his Sefer, he has an approach which a lot of other Achronim liked also, the Menchas Chinuch and the Rashash and the Chalkis Yoav, all said something like this, that he thinks that the idea is that there is a mitzvah in the Torah of Hashavas Aveda. So first off the bat, that's very similar to what we just said about Lo Samar Al Dam Reyacha, that if I see somebody's property lying around lost, so I have an obligation to return it to him. And certainly, again, I can't be the one making it lost. So far it sounds just like what we just said about Lo Samar Al Dam Reyacha. But he has one extra element there which adds to how it fits into this whole story. So normally there is a din. If I incur expenses in getting the item back to you, so I'm allowed to charge you for that. So therefore, the Gemara says that if it's going to come out that it costs me more in my expenses, because I have to take a day off work or whatever it is, and I have to pay the FedEx or whatever it is to get the item back to you, it's going to cost me more than your item is worth, so then I'm potter. Then it's not kedai to do if it's going to end up, I'm going to send him a bill. I found a $50 item, I'm going to send him a bill for $100, so it's not worth it. But there's a discussion with the Gemara about this already. What if that implies that it's only an issue if it's going to cost him more? What if it's going to cost him the same? What if he lost a $100 item, and I'm going to return his $100 item with a bill for $100? So it sounds like I should do it then. So it seems to suggest that even though I'm covering, even though he's going to end up breaking even monetarily, it's still worth it to him to get the item back. And in that way, this is to the loser, the one who lost the item.
The person
who lost his item. That even though he's going to end up with a bill that he has to pay me, the same amount that his item is worth, so monetarily he breaks even, or you know, he loses out because he ends up losing the value no matter what, it's still worth it for him to get his item back.
Why?
Also, apparently, Hashavas Aveda is containing the premise that, yes, they want their monetary value, but they also want their item. And
the
even
dogs,
if they lose... Sorry?
The lost dogs.
Right, so especially when it's a dog, you know, all the more so you can understand why that would be the case. But even if it's not, and this, by the way, has an interesting connection with Lost Achmod, where you also find the ability to kind of bifurcate between the value of the item and the physical item itself. So too here, maybe we'll put that on our list also. But so too here, that seems to be what you see from here. So in that sense, it's a good source for our question of what if I break your property and I pay for it? I'm assuming that there's an isser, because yes, even though I have the check and I'm coming out breaking even, I'd rather not have the check and have my item. So that's what you can derive from this din in Hashavas Aveda, that they would rather have their item back even if it costs them the whole value of the item to get it back.
But isn't these bits with some type of chesed? And isn't there a certain type of, from the person who returns it, is that... there's a certain development, moral development, which is what Chesed is doing. So even if he's returning it at the same level, he's gaining something from it. Right? He said the person wants it back. So should we still have him do it because the returner, the person who returns it, is gaining his neshama something. He's gaining.
Yeah, so you're opening
something from it.
So you're opening up a fascinating topic.
Two sides, one who returns it. But also, we are better people for doing that, which is the chesed part. I mean, otherwise, you're forgetting that thing. It's not just the financial. You know,
right. So that's a fascinating topic.
For us, no one else has this mitzvah.
Right. So that should for sure be on our agenda if you want to follow that, because that's a fascinating topic, how chesed plays out in terms of that, and the interconnection between the specific mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda and principles that it tells about chesed. That should definitely be on the list for another tangent, although we're just about out of time.
But you're saying it's related
but
to
here,
the
one, you're right.
We always have some relationship.
You're all that's all correct. One element, though, to keep in mind is it's easy to lose sight of that it's only a chesed if it's helpful for the other person.
Right.
So for me to show up at the guy's door, let's talk about the case the Gemara excludes, right? A guy loses some $10 item, and I show up at your door and say, "Hi, sir, you'd be so happy. I found your $10 item. By the way, it cost me $250."
No, I said up
right.
to the value of it. That's
right.
Right.
But
the, up to the
it
value.
Shows you.
And he'll take it, but I gain from it.
Right, so I gained from it. I spent the whole day working on this.
Right.
So, but at the same time, if it doesn't benefit the other guy,
right.
So then it's on the end of the day, not a chesed. Right. But there's a lot to explore about that.
Right.
So that's a separate topic in itself, so we'll put
that
on the agenda also.
No, the other thing was, you're saying that we're supposed to Damriacha. So if we're seeing someone smoking cigarettes, which you know is deadly, we should stop them right then at that moment.
That might be true. Say? Yeah, they're going to end up punching you in the nose.
But right. Still, we are standing as they're killing themselves.
Right, so you
we're
might...
taking drugs or doing something.
Right, so you might be right about
according
that.
According to what you said, we have to stop them right away.
Yeah, so that it sounds like that from the Rambam. The question is, to what extent are you going to be successful if you're just going to keep smoking somewhere else? And if you don't have the ability...
Wait, the Torah doesn't say if you're going to be successful. It says you're
well, that's
to
what that is the assumption. The assumption is that Lo Samud means that you can make a difference. If you can't make a difference, then there's no...
You're going to stop people if they eat meat?
Huh?
hope not.
Well, meat is not the same.
It is.
If someone has
In that case,
heart condition.
Now we're definitely out of time.
No, if someone has a heart condition. Yes. If someone has a heart condition.
Well, they will have a heart condition. If they have a heart condition in some case, the meat doesn't make a difference anymore at some point, right?
Okay, but we are. That's a perfect time to save by the bell.
My point is that, God willing, next week we'll
fill in some other sources.
It's not a secret.